I can hear you, Kirk, in the background. There we go. Well, good day to you, one and all, wherever you may be. Welcome to Observations. We're here with Scott Kirk, and I'm Craig. You know, I received an email this morning. We were talking about before the show began, and it pertains to a fellow named Ron Wyatt. Name ring a bell, Kirk?
He's covered all kind of things, including the Ark of the Covenant. And
yeah. He's the fellow that began his archaeological investigations looking for Noah's Ark by actually doing made a model of the mountains of Ararat, a 3D model, and then he made a 3D model of to scale of the Ark, so both of those can be made to scale, and then he filled that area with water. And then he watched where the Ark would come to rest if, in fact, it was near the mountains of Ararat when the water subsided. Mm-hmm. And based upon the hydrodynamics of water and how it literally pushes things away from elevated places as opposed to drawing them to the elevated place, he was the first to say, wait a minute, there is no chance whatsoever that the Ark is on the top of Mount Ararat or even on the sides of the mountain. It can be among the mountains. It can be, in the vicinity. It could even be in a portion of the range of what is Ararat. But it isn't on Ararat. The hydrodynamic flow of water would preclude that. So the guy was thoughtful, and he began the process that way. And then what he did is, after conducting his experiments, and he saw that the Ark came to rest in the same place every time, around Ararat. So he, and it was south west of the actual mountain, very close to, not too far from Lake Van, kind of halfway between Lake Van and Turkey. So this is in eastern Turkey. This would be the Kurdish area where, there's a lot of bad stuff that's going on and has for a long time. And so he set off to see if he could find it based upon what he had done, and had a devil of a time getting to proximity of Mount of the location in the foothills of Ararat that he was looking for, because it's so primitive in eastern Turkey. But eventually he got there, and there was the Ark. And it was available to be seen in this really desolate region because of the fact that Ararat itself is a volcanic range. And some of the, with erosion over time and earthquakes and the like, part of the Ark became visible as a result of the erosion and earth movement. And part of the Ark that became visible had actually been preserved, very much like Herculaneum and Pompeii are preserved to this day. And when he went there, and he saw this portion of the Ark, he found out that the length was the dimensions laid out in cubits for the Ark.
Oh.
And then he said, but the width didn't match. And then it dawned on him, of course the width doesn't match. It's wider than the Ark is supposed to be. Because what happens if you were to set make a boat or a ship out of wood with wood beams? Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have it sit there for a long time, and it's going to be then filled with very heavy rock and volcanic debris. But rock, what's going to happen?
Well, in the snow too, it's going to bend it.
It's going to splay, which means that the beams that are holding it together across the midsection are going to fail, and the sides of the boat are going to fall away. You know, it happens in wrecks even made out of steel over time. You know, the hydrodynamic force of water sort of pushes them in when the ship is in the water, but when it's out of the water, the ship is going to want to splay, which means it's going to want to open up at the top. And so that's what he found had happened. And it was interesting. He took samples of the wood. I've seen them in his museum. And the resin content is consistent with the resinous wood. I use the term glue lambs. There's some that would criticize that as a specific term, because a glue lamb is actually made not only with wood and layers of wood and glue, but also pressure and heat. And he would have had heat, but nothing for pressure.
Pressure.
But still, it's pretty obvious that that if you read God's instructions, that the resinous material that he was asked to make the ark out of was yesteryear's glue lamps. But beyond even that, he also took samples of the rivets of the, and there, you know, these bolts that were used to secure the planks and the beams together. And the metallurgy of those is very similar to what we would have today in a stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It had all of the same components that we would have in steel. In other words, this was 3,000 BCE, and so 5,000 years ago. So 3,000 BCE, most of humankind was still in the Stone Age. And yet they're very, very sophisticated metallurgy that was used to do this. And if God didn't provide the instructions on how to create that metal, there is, you're not going to hold a ship of that size together using brass or bronze.
Mm-hmm. Now, would the Moloch have helped?
I don't think so. It could have. Oh, it could have. But, it could have. I mean, absolutely could have. They would have had the strength to provide all the help in the world, and it's not explained. And, all we're told is God gave, these are the instructions God gave. The instructions he gave are the perfect dimensions for a ship of that size. If you look at the great battleships like the Bismarck, same dimensions. You look at the great super tankers, exactly the same dimension. I don't mean like approximate. I mean, if you take the freeboard, the length overall and the beam of the arc, and you compare it to the same dimensions of our largest battleships, aircraft carriers, super tankers, which would be on the same kind of scale. Exact. I mean, it's exact. I mean, and we're talking about measurements in three dimensions that are precisely designed based upon the most sophisticated naval ships of our day.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah, so, you look at that and say, well, so he gave very good instructions. He talked about glue lamps. He talked about the number of decks that he wanted, the number of doorways, because that was symbolic of the three destinations of human souls. And all we know is that after giving those specific instructions, that Noah did exactly as Yahweh had instructed. He didn't say, oh, God, that part's way too rough. You know what I think I need? I need a New Testament that my family is going to be saved if we just believe.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, there's a real eye-opener for Christians. No, what did he say? He listened.
Uh-huh.
And then he engaged,
the path he was given,
following the instructions that Yahweh had provided. So it's a marvelous story in that regard. And of course, the story of the rainbow, where the seven fundamental colors of light, Roy G. Biv, are manifest before us, and how that is symbolic of the fullness of light, and how we will, as covenants, the covenant's children, are going to become light-based, energy-based, spiritual creatures as a result of the covenant. It's the perfect sign for the covenant. In fact, the Ark of the Covenant, which we'll get to in a moment, the entire back wall of the room was a prismatic rainbow of colors, according to Ron Wyatt. The same rainbow is the backdrop for the Ark of the Covenant, because the Ark of the Covenant and Noah's Ark are essentially the same thing. They are the means to get from our world, in trouble as it is, as stormy as it is, as rough as it is, as deadly as it is, to Yahweh's perfect realm in heaven of light. So Ron Wyatt survived all manner of risk and all manner of difficulty after a systematic and thoughtful appraisal of where the Ark was and found it. Now, I have been to his museum. I was there because I was taking one of my sons to Vanderbilt for a tour. And it's in the shadow of Vanderbilt, so I went there. And I have seen the wood. I have examined the metal. And I have seen the model that he created showing where the Ark must be. And when I went back and I read the whole account, and the whole account is marvelous, including the stone that he found and pictured that shows the eight souls leaving the Ark that's dated to that time. The thing that was most amazing